As most of you will know, we recently learned of the sad death of one of the Talking Newspaper's oldest listeners, Douglas Whittaker. Dougie was a remarkable character and always had plenty of stories to relate, many of them about his activities in the Second World War. John Hodgson went to interview Dougie about this some 18 months ago and came away with a recording of about 2 hours in length, which was too long for the Talking Newspaper. However, John managed to persuade Dougie to do a separate talk about just one memorable incident during the war, and we issued this recording on the Talking Newspaper back in September 2017. It was an amazing recording, and as a tribute to Dougie, we're going to repeat that interview today. It's entitled A Toehold in Sicily.
Well, hello everybody, it's John Hodgson here again, and I'm talking to somebody that I think a lot of people will know in the Talking Newspaper. This is Douglas Whittaker, and I'm in his house today, and he's going to tell us about a rather exciting incident that happened when he was in the army. So, Douglas, can I ask you, when you landed, when you were going to land in Sicily, what did you have to do before you actually set off?
Well, it was something well planned, extremely well planned. We knew exactly where we were going because we saw a mock-up of the landing place on a sand tray. After that, we went into landing. We were into landing craft, still in the held up by the decks, and they lowered us down to the sea. Unfortunately, the sea was extremely rough.
Right.
And it wasn't very pleasant lowering to be lowered down. As you can imagine, the waves came up and smacked the bottom of the boat a couple of times, nearly overturned it.
Good Lord.
And then we were down. Eventually we were down, and from there on we had to... Mind you, this all took place in the dark.
Yes.
Because it was... the landing was scheduled for first light.
I see. You were trying to take them by surprise.
Yes, that's the idea. So... we had to rendezvous with other boats, other landing craft,
yeah,
from three other ships.
Right.
We were all about 3 miles out from the coast because it was so rough.
Right.
They hadn't come in any closer. So that is exactly what we did. We came, got down to the bottom. The only naval rating, the person who was actually driving each, all these things, was a naval rating.
Yeah,
I see. It was more or less the Navy's, and it went to go along with what they were doing. We had to rendezvous at a certain spot, at a certain time, which was about 5 minutes after we hit the sea.
Yeah.
After we got down to the sea. We went over to this spot and joined the other craft. We were going round in a circle until the appointed minute,
yes,
for the landing. Right, in we go, sort of thing. But we'd gone 2 or 3 yards, and the engine cut out.
No,
by
oh, dear.
This time we were rather too far away from the mothership.
The mothership, yeah.
So what? And we thought, it's all right. They'll send another yeah, craft out for us.
Right.
The naval rating, he opened the engine up, tried to put it right, said, tried to check on it. I said, nothing I can do.
Oh dear.
We'll have to get back to the ship. How are we going to get back?
No engine?
Well, no engine. Well, we're going to have to paddle it back.
Paddle?
Well, yeah, actually, yeah.
So what did he use for paddles?
And, we looked around, the only thing were the duck boards.
Get away.
On the fort. Right. I mean, they are usually, there's usually something like that.
Yes, at the bottom. Yeah.
In the bottom of a landing craft anyhow. And so then it was lads with the rifles, they were levering at the boards and breaking them off. We got them out,
yeah.
So we all had a board to paddle with.
And did you manage to get back to them?
Yes, in spite of the rough sea.
Right.
And it was all, as you could imagine, that added to a great deal of difficulty.
You must have done.
We just sort of carried on.
So eventually,
eventually we got back to the under the ship. Right, we're ready to come up aboard. No, you can't. You know, you couldn't. We couldn't get back onto the ship. We'll send another landing craft down for you.
Oh, I see.
So another landing craft duly lowered. And I thought that was going to turn over, actually,
because the sea was rough. Yeah.
As the sea's coming up, it hit in the bottom, and it was empty.
Right.
No waiting. You can imagine what it was like. So eventually, he was in. He was down beside us. Now, next job, change over, move from one boat to the other.
Yes. Whilst they're both going up and down.
Oh, that's easy. Just jumping across from one to the other. Is it heck? No, anything but. We're in a rough sea like that, 1 minute one boat will be up in the air, the next minute you've changed places and the other's up in the air.
Yeah.
Or else they move apart. Oh, you can be 10 yards apart. But at one point,
yeah.
And then they'll come together and just clash together.
And that's when you had to jump.
Then, yes, we were told, when they come together, you must jump. Don't waste any time because they'll soon be apart. Mm-hmm. And just hold it, keep you cool. Now, that would be bad enough if you weren't encumbered with anything.
With all your kit, yes.
We had all our kit on.
Yeah.
All our kit on, including bread gun pouches and on the front and back on the back. And I also was carrying across my back, across the top of my pack, I had a theodolite stand.
Oh, right, yeah.
My partner, my assistant, he was carrying, he had the theodolite in a case.
Right.
But otherwise he was, I mean, that's quite heavy, theodolite, but so we were both really more weighed down than the other people in the boat. They were all infantry.
I see.
So they're more or less self-contained.
Yeah.
Except, of course, some of them had machine guns and. However.
So you made your way towards the shore.
So from there on, once we got in. We had to make our way in shore.
Right.
By this time, of course, all the original lot had hit the shore.
All right.
And we saw a lot of bangs and flashes and whatnot on the shore. And before we got there, we noticed that two of the landing craft were blazing, were sort of half submerged and blazing.
Right.
Now, so there we started getting a little bit worried.
Yes, I think you were.
A little bit worried. Yeah. By this time, it was just coming daylight. Just coming nicely, light enough for a couple of Messerschmitts to come along the coast. Came down, they were machine gunning us.
Yeah.
And machine gunning, we noticed that the bullets went straight across the engine
right.
Cowling.
Yeah.
You could see splinters coming up from the engine cowling. We were packed like blooming sardines
boat,
and not a single man was hit.
Good
heavens. Remarkably. Right, passed over, went a bit, found the coast, then they came back again, had another go. And we still got away without a scratch.
Well, that's miraculous.
Which was miraculous, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
By that time, we were just about beaching. Yeah. We beached just past just by the side of these blazing ones. And of course, especially with those the aircraft around, we wanted to get out of the way.
I bet you did. So how did you get off the beach then, Don?
The beach was no wider 15 feet.
Is that all?
See?
Right.
It was about 15 feet wide, the actual sand, right to a very low wall, barely 2 feet, only 2 feet high. This little low wall in front of the raw fishermen's houses, and this wall was just to protect them from the sea.
Yes. And did it protect you much?
Well, in the event, yes, it did. Because there was nobody, no no troops, no enemy in the houses, and the houses were hiding that from where the pillbox was, further up the hill behind.
Ah, so you had a bit of protection.
So we were quite safe there. Once we got off and we got our wits together, yeah. Which we took some doing to begin with. Yeah. Being the first time in real true
real
action.
Combat, yes.
Yeah, in real combat. The infantry peeled off between the houses and up the slopes, yeah. On that side. We had to go, myself and me, and my assistant, we had to go the other way. And the other way was, we had to cross a road, a tarmac road,
yeah,
coming down from higher up the hill, I would say 50 yards high, and the length of the road about 100 yards, a slope down right onto the beach.
And you have to get across that.
We had to get across there.
Small matter.
And and of course the pillbox was still in action. They were as soon as we showed our heads, machine gun bullets were flying around. Oh dear. I remember saying to my assistant, "You hang on there. I'll get across. Don't forget, it must be quick. And for goodness sake, look where you're dropping when you get to the other side. There's a little bit of a ditch there, but who knows? There might be anti-personnel mines in there.
Oh right.
You could throw yourself into the ditch straight onto anti-personnel mine. So." You can't just go haphazard.
No, you have to be careful where you're going.
You have to be very careful, yeah. And at the same time, be in a hurry.
So you managed to get across, I guess.
So it was a case of one, two, three, go!
Yeah.
And dash across, and we are bullets, men. I fell one go, right pretty close, and I was into the ditch. I looked around in the ditch, and then I said, "No," I said, "it's clear. Come on here as soon as you're ready." He jumped up and woof, he was over the same. he was shot at as well.
Right.
He wasn't hit.
Good.
Either.
Right.
And then we threw a hawthorn hedge into a field area, perhaps 100 yards square, I would imagine, perhaps a little bit more. Because it was obviously a field that had been used for growing tobacco plants, because at the head of this field was a three-story building that was the tobacco factory.
All right. So in peaceful times, you'd have been quite glad to see that.
Well, we couldn't, yeah. Oh, yeah, we actually went in there and there was drying tobacco on racks.
Yeah, I see.
But, we weren't sure whether there were more troops
waiting for you,
enemy in the tobacco factory.
Yeah.
I always put it down to the fact that if the defenders had been the Germans, that would have been a lot worse. As it was, I'm pretty sure they were all Italians
that were
defending the place.
Yeah.
And of course, as soon as our infantry had taken over the pillbox. That was it.
Right.
There was no more.
No more resistance.
No more resistance there. Then. But then we had to get into this field and start to get our equipment out and measure. I had to decide where each of the four guns had to go.
That was your main job?
That was my main job.
Right. Now, just briefly, Douglas, you said, when we were talking before, that there was something not quite right with the guns that you were finally given.
That's right.
So can you just briefly tell us about that?
Oh, yes, certainly. Well, we waited, I dare say, a couple of hours, and nothing happened. We were that on our own then, because the infantry had gone, and there was just myself and the assistant.
Yeah.
Once we'd decided where to put the guns and we'd done all the survey part, we sat down to wait for them. And we waited, and a couple of hours passed, and nothing. And then suddenly they appeared. Only two guns.
Only two?
Only two guns came.
And you wanted...
The others, unfortunately, have been on another gun transporter, and it had gone down into the rough sea.
Sunk without trace.
Went down. Oh, went down to the bottom.
So what did he get in replacement then? So,
well, with nothing immediately, of course. We were stuck.
Yeah.
Two guns, no officers or anything with it. You know, they just put the guns aboard, and nobody to appeal to. So just waited. We waited a bit longer until finally an officer arrived. And he was scratching his head, you know. And in fact, I had a talk with him, and he, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Well, I said, we're going to try and get some other guns, aren't we? We aren't a battery with two guns.
Just two guns, no.
Right, we lost the infantry to, we'll organise the infantry to inform us as soon as the see any guns that we could
to
take
let you
over.
Have them. And were they successful?
They were successful to a point. The first gun that we got, the first gun that arrived, was a German 88.
Oh, my word.
Well, the German 88s, they were like the super gun of the time.
Yes, yes.
Very sophisticated. Yes, we had to learn on the spot.
Yes, how to use them.
How to use that gun. The other gun that they brought along was a very old First World War gun howitzer. That was an Italian one, and the big iron wheels.
Yes,
big iron wheels, and the very basic ranging ability. There wasn't much equipment to it.
No.
Fortunately, with the Italian one, they'd only about half a dozen shells with it.
Yeah.
A gun's no good without shells.
Without shells, no, not really.
The German 88, though, it was better because they'd got a limber full of shells as well.
All right, yeah.
So with that, we more or less concentrated on that. And when the gun teams, the other gun teams arrived, we had to have a training session.
Right. So eventually you got the guns that you needed.
Eventually, but it was quite some. We actually started to move up country anyhow then, thinking that we might come across something better.
Yeah.
We've moved up 30, 40 miles up the coast, and we were on the lower slopes of Mount Etna.
Oh, yes.
The lower slopes of Mount Etna. We were actually finished up, we were in a vineyard, and then we came under fire from Germany.
From the Germans, yes.
And obviously they knew what they were doing as well, because it was pretty good gunnery.
Yes, and they knew what they were doing.
And pretty close, so we dug in quickly, very quickly dig in trenches, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
They could only be shallow trenches, but next time a shot came along, we could hear the shell coming. You could hear the boom from a distance, and we heard a shell coming over, and we all dive for our trenches.
Yeah,
and it's sort of an instinct when you're diving for a trench.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're inclined to put your hands out like that.
Yes.
As you dive, and that was how I got one. I got a shell sprint to my finger.
Oh right.
I was the only one that got that was touched though.
You're the only one. After all that shelling.
Nobody else was.
Well, that's incredible.
We had a charmed life
to
North Africa.
Well, Douglas, that was absolutely fascinating. I was reliving that with you. And if it wasn't for people like you doing what you did, you and I wouldn't be able to be chatting like this today, would we? So we've got to be very grateful for that. Thank you very much.